And let me open this time in prayer. Father, I struggle with the words of that hymn we just sang. I recognize my selfishness and my fleshly desire to hold back for myself and not give all to you. I pray that you would give me, give all of us your grace to love. I pray that as we go through this challenging passage, which again really has been difficult for me to prepare, just because of the dissonance between this attitude and the selfish attitudes in my own heart. Father, I pray that you would give us the grace to accept your word and to be willing to obey you. I pray that you would help me to teach this in a way that is faithful to your word. I pray that you would give all of us ears to hear what your spirit has to say to us individually as we apply this in our individual lives. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We've been looking at this section on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and Jesus' treatment of different sections of the Old Testament law and addressing the heart issues that underlie each of the commands in the Old Testament law. We saw that he brought, in this particular paragraph, verses 38 through 42, he starts out with the Old Testament law, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, which governs the process of justice and does so justly. But then he addresses the heart attitude of his followers in verse 39. Do not stand opposed to or resist that evil person who has injured you or bothered you. And then Jesus gives four scenarios of what this looks like in verses 39 through 42. Last week we looked at the first two ways that Jesus fleshed this command out: do not stand against the one who has done evil to you. And one in the first scenario we have someone slapped on the cheek, and Jesus says, turn to him the other. Don't antagonize those who have insulted you. I think this is what the slap on the cheek is referring to, as an insult. Take an inoffensive stance and reply, one that would even allow the offender to take another pot shot at you if they want. And we looked at the example of King David in the Old Testament overlooking insults from Nabal, one which he almost didn't overlook, but was talked into overlooking, and then Shimei later on in his life, who was throwing rocks at him and cursing him, and David said, it's not my job to get even from an insult. I will leave that in God's hands. And we noted how this kind of a response, this response of turning toward the person who has insulted you, turning your other cheek toward them, indicates keeping the relationship open, not shutting them down. It indicates extending grace to them. And later on, Jesus says, bless those who curse you. To take that kind of an attitude when you have been insulted can only come from God. God's grace working through you. The faith to believe that God really will take care of this, that you really can leave it in His hands, and that you don't have to defend your reputation. The second scenario we looked at last week was, I think, a scenario of, I call it extortion. I think basically it's a situation where you may have actually hurt somebody or harm them in some way, damages, and that you felt like you had fairly paid the damages and taken care of it, but they're still sore about it, and they want more out of you. They're not willing to forgive you, and they want to take you to court and sue you. And Jesus says, if they want to do that, give them more than they're asking for. In the Jewish court system, they couldn't take your jacket, but they could take your underclothes. And so Jesus is saying, just give them your jacket too. Whatever it takes to smooth this over, give them more than they expect. And the question comes, are we willing to hold our possessions loosely enough that we're willing to let them go, even if we don't really think it's fair? Do we need to give our possessions over to God like the missionary Otto Koning did with his pineapples? Give it over to God, they became God's pineapples. He wasn't going to worry anymore when the natives stole his pineapples. The third scenario is what I want to get in today. That's verse 41. Jesus says, and whichever one compels you to go 1 mile, keep going with him. Two. This word that's used...
This is the Greek text of Matthew here. This word here, angerousai, is the word rooted in... it comes from Persian origins, and they called the mail carriers angerousai. The way they had set up the mail system in Persia was that the king would send out, it was a huge empire, 120 some provinces, is that what we learned from the book of Esther or Daniel? And it's a huge empire stretching across, thousands and thousands of miles. And so when the king needed to issue a command, he would send riders out from the capital, and then those riders would have to get out to the far ends of the empire to deliver the message. And sometimes their horses would get tired. Sometimes they would need to cross an ocean to get to the next province, or across a river or whatever. And they had unlimited authority to take whatever resources these angerousai message carriers had unlimited authority from the king to take whatever resources they needed in order to deliver the message. And so if they're riding into town and their horse is tired, they had the authority to take your horse and keep riding on your horse to the next town. And then you've got to deal with the consequences. Or if you've got a boat and they come up and need to get across the body of water, then they could take your boat and go, and it didn't matter what your order of business was that day, you had to give in. It was said that there was no pardon for a traveler who would refuse to let one of these people have his horse. And death could be the penalty for anyone who would deny the best horse in his stable to these men. The same word is used, I think the only other place it occurs in the Bible is in Matthew 27, when Simon, the North African guy, is on the side of the street as Jesus is carrying his cross up to the hill of Golgotha, and so the soldiers grabbed Simon and said, "You carry Jesus' cross." Simon didn't have a say in the matter. He just had to pick up the cross and carry it for Jesus, because Jesus was too weak to carry it himself. He was impressed into duty. And Jesus is saying, if there's an authority that impresses you into duty and forces you to do something you weren't expecting to do, and is really kind of going above and beyond the call of duty, what should our attitude be when we encounter this? Another word in here, hupage. This one is a command. You go out of your way. But the hoopah at the beginning of that has to do with being under, like a hypodermic needle. Hypodermic needle goes under the skin. And ago means to lead, to literally lead under in the eyes. The under part has to do with you're going out of your way. This is not, you're not being asked to do something that's convenient for you. You're being asked, Jesus is saying, go out of your way to take another mile down the road for this guy that's impressed you into service. Being a Christian involves going out of your way to do what God wants you to do rather than what you wanted to do. It includes responding appropriately to interruptions that threaten your productivity. I tell you, I struggle with this. This is hard for me because of the way I'm wired. Accomplishment of a goal is very important to me. And so interruptions mean I don't accomplish the goal today, and that threatens my self-worth and my feeling like I'm a capable man, you know. Interruptions feel very threatening to me when the phone rings or when I hear a voice yelling at me from across the house or whatever it is. My natural instinct then is to just to sigh and, you know, complain. I'm not going to get the work done that I wanted to do, and that is my own sinful idol. I'm not saying that there's anything right about that. I'm just saying this is difficult for me, and I understand if this is difficult for you. Now there is certainly, you know, we can go overboard on this. There is certainly a balance to be had in protecting ourselves from so many interruptions that other people are running our lives and we have no direction. There is a balance. As we see in Jesus' own ministry, he had this regular pattern of being engaged and allowing himself to be interrupted all day long, healing people, and then taking seasons away where the people couldn't find him, out in lonely places where he could pray, and he kept the balance going back and forth. And there is balance that we need to hold in our lives regarding interruptions. And, you know, one of the ways that I've dealt with that is I've learned to stop answering the church phone line. that answering machine is there to catch the calls. And if you call the church and you get the answering machine, it's not, you know, don't take offense. This is just my way of screening out the sales calls and the panhandlers that are nothing more than a waste of my time. And that's, you know, we find ways of treading that balance wisely. But what it should be our attitude when we get interrupted? Hey, go a mile with me. Here's a picture of a Jewish nobleman leading the horse for another nobleman here. He's going out of his way to take this guy on the horse. And as they're, I thought it was interesting this interruption creates an opportunity to spend some time together with a new person. And that is one of the redeeming factors I see in interruptions. It gives us an unexpected opportunity to spend some time together with a new person. And what do you do with that time? What will you talk about? How will you show God's grace in this person's life? Jesus said, part of that is saying, let's go on another mile. I'll hang out with you another mile. What else here? Here's another thing here. Apparently, part of the culture that Jesus lived in had the expectation that if you were a scholar, if you were a student or a teacher, you were exempt from impressment into duty. So the soldier says, hey, I want you to carry my backpack to the next town. You could say, well, I'm a scholar. I can't carry burdens. And so the soldier would have to ask somebody else. But Jesus is saying, another facet of what Jesus is saying is, hey, don't take exceptions. You guys, yeah, you're disciples. You're going to be Bible teachers. But just don't take the exception that you could take, technically. Take the opportunity if God puts it in your lap. Be willing to serve. Here's another thing that makes it difficult. It means submitting to somebody else's will, doesn't it? Matthew Henry had a good way of putting it. He said, say not, I would do it if I were not compelled to, but I hate to be forced. Rather say, therefore I'll do it, for otherwise there'll be a quarrel. It's better to serve him than to serve my own lust of pride and revenge. A willingness to submit to the will of somebody else who wants to get something else done than what you wanted to get done today. Part of that is submitting to the will of God. Not your will, not my will, but yours be done. Jesus prayed. Now, how does this play out in modern life today? We fought a few wars in America to get rid of the obligation to have to house and feed soldiers. And, I don't think anybody has been impressed lately into rowing boats for the British or anything. But we do, in government, there are some things like jury duty, which is an interruption that comes, and an opportunity to uphold God's righteousness, the law of God, as a juror in the court system. There's the military draft as well. If someone were to ask you to deploy for a year to Afghanistan, would you say, well, how about two? that's really hard for me to even imagine being open to. But this is the kind of thing Jesus is calling us to, the willingness to give up what we had wanted to do, be willing to submit to another's will, and extend grace, freely giving to someone else. Employers have a little more claim on our time than the government. At least they take a little more claim on our time often. They can be imposing. What about the employer that puts an extra heavy assignment on you or gives you a deadline that you think is a little too close? Are you willing to cheerfully accept the difficult challenges that the boss gives you? At home, I have the authority to impress household duties, chores upon my children. If I ask my child to take out the garbage, to take out the kitchen garbage, what does that mean to go a second mile? It might mean actually putting a new liner in the kitchen garbage can or taking the garbage out to the outdoor trash can instead of leaving the sack in the middle of the floor, or maybe also taking out the bathroom garbage. Kids, there are ways that you can respect the authority that you are under. When you're asked to do something, are you willing to cheerfully do more? Are you willing to interrupt what you were doing in order to serve, to take an opportunity to serve? When we cheerfully go the extra mile, it gets people's attention. I remember when I was having trouble with my printer. I shouldn't say too much of the story or I'll go over time, but I was having trouble with my printer, and there was this expensive part that obviously we did some troubleshooting. This was obviously the problem. It was the drum, the image drum, and so I called the manufacturer of the image drum, and I said, "You made this thing. You said that it's supposed to print 1,000 copies, and there's no way I've printed 1,000 copies off of this. I want my money back." And they said, "Too bad." And I said, "This is not right. I'm not going to stand for this." So I called the supply company that sold it to me. I said, "I called the manufacturer and they wouldn't." And the supply company that I bought it from said, "Well, just a minute. Let's see what we can do to work it out." And I just was amazed. They called the manufacturer, got the manufacturer to give them a new toner, a new drum, and actually in the process identified that I had mishandled the drum, and that's why it wasn't working properly in the first place. But they said, "It's okay, we're just going to give you a new drum." And then when the thing came in the mail, there was a Starlight mint in the package, and that was just over the top for me. I was like, "Yes, I'm going to keep buying from you guys." They went the extra mile to serve me. They took the opportunity, and I appreciated that. It means a whole lot to the person on the other end when you're willing to serve. Adam Clark said, "The way to improve injustice of man to our own advantage is to exercise it under meekness, gentleness, and long-suffering, without which disposition of mind no one can either be happy here or hereafter. For he that avenges himself must lose the mind of Christ, and thus suffer an injury 10,000 times greater than he could ever receive from man. Revenge at such an expense is dear indeed." Only love can motivate us to go that second mile, though. I don't have enough kindness and generosity in me to do extra things for people. I'm just not that way. Maybe some of you are naturally more gracious, but I don't feel that way in myself. To spend that extra time with that person that's a little slow on the uptake, or to spend that extra bit of creativity showing that I thought about you and doing something special for you rather than just doing the job. This shows I'm, investing myself rather than just doing my duty. And this requires reliance upon God. God is love. God has defined mercy and has demonstrated mercy to us by sending His Son Jesus to die for us on the cross. And that is, when we were enemies, antagonistically opposed to Him. And it's that love of God alone which can give me the ability to love other people. I must rely upon God to get that love and to be able to share it with others. Matthew Henry said, "Though we must not invite injuries, we must meet them cheerfully in the way of duty and make the best of them. And if anyone says flesh and blood couldn't pass by such an affront, let them remember flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God." That's what Jesus said. It's a natural person working in their own fleshly strength can't make it to heaven. Only by reliance upon the grace that God gives us are we able to even live like a Christian. It's not something we can muster up from ourselves. So not only are we to graciously give when authority calls us, interrupts us, demands that we go out of our way into service, we're also not to stand against private individuals when they ask more of us than they should. And that's what the fourth scenario is here. Give to the one who asks of you, the beggar, and do not turn away or refuse the one who wants to borrow from you. Now here, we're not talking about the person that is a good friend and occasionally says, "Hey, could you help me with something?" We're talking about this word here, the participle the one who is characterized by asking, the one who's always asking you for something. You can see him coming and you know they're going to ask me for something, and I hate that. They're the mooch. Maybe it's your little brother or sister that's always asking to play with your toys because your toys are the nicer ones and they don't like their toys. They're always asking. That's what this word implies. And the borrower is also mentioned. You know, the borrower, the one who's never prepared, he's always has to get some kind of help from you in order to do the job that he ought to be able to do himself. Maybe it's a neighbor that keeps borrowing your tools and then doesn't always take the best care of them. You see them coming and you're like, oh, what are they going to ask for now? What should our attitude be towards people like this? Individuals who are asking for more than you think they should. We have two components. Two answers to this question. One answer is that Jesus has given us a command. Give. And don't turn away. Give, don't turn away to this individual. We've got a command. But he also addresses the attitude. God also addresses the attitudes of our heart. How can we have an attitude willing to give and not turn away these people? Well, this command, Jesus says, nothing more than what the Old Testament has already said. If we look in Deuteronomy chapter 15, the law of Moses said, if there should be in your midst a poor man of your brothers in one of your cities in the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart, neither shall you by any means close up your hand from your brother who is in want. You shall surely open your hand to him, and you shall lend to him as much as he wants, according to his need. Take heed to yourself, that there be not a secret thing in your heart, an iniquity, saying, oh, the seventh year, the year of release is coming near, and your hand shall be evil to your brother that is in want, and you shall not give to him, and he shall cry against you to the Lord, and there shall be great sin in you. You shall surely give to him, and you shall lend to him as much as he wants, according as he is in need. And you shall not grudge in your heart as you give to him. Because on this account, the Lord your God will bless you in all your works, and in all things on which you shall lay your hand. For the poor will not fail off of your land. Therefore I charge you to do this thing, saying, you shall surely open your hands to your poor brother, and to him that is distressed upon your land. Could it be any more clear than that? This is the attitude God calls us to. Generosity to the poor. Just run through a few more. The sinner, well it says, the sinner borrows and will not pay again, but the righteous has compassion and gives. These verses, by the way, are verses which use the same word Jesus did in the Greek translation of the Old Testament. It's the righteous who gives. He says, I was once young, indeed I'm now old. I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. He is merciful and lends continually, and his seed shall be blessed. It is the righteous person who lends and gives. Proverbs 19, he that has pity on the poor lends to the Lord. The Lord will recompense to him according to his gift. When we have pity and give to the poor, we're giving to the Lord. That's what Jesus said. Remember in the parable of the sheep and the goats? And as much as you did it to the least of these, you've done it to me. People are asking, well, when were you poor and when did I not give to you? And Jesus said, it's because you didn't give to the poor people. You didn't give to me. Deuteronomy 23, as well as Exodus 22, talk about charging interest or excessive interest, depending on which position you take on what usury means. But he said, don't charge usury to your brother. They could charge usury to a stranger, but even so, could not take advantage of them when they're poor. And the Psalm 112 that we read earlier in the service, actually uses a different word for give, but or lend, but same idea. It's the good man who has compassion and lends, and he does so with good judgment. And this is the one that God blesses. God's command is clear. Our attitude towards the poor must be generosity. That's God's command. There's no way around it. Now, there are some qualifications. If you notice, one qualification is according to your ability. Somebody needs a house. It's not going to be wise for you to give them your house and then you and your family are homeless. There are limits to what God has given you the ability to give. And sometimes those limits get pushed. You know, we see the TV preachers that talk about, you know, hey, give me money and then God will bless you. And some people I have seen make some unwise decisions giving more than God has called them and equipped them to give, thinking that they'll get rich in return, when that's not the way God called us to give. But when God gives us resources, those are things that we need to be able to consider how to share. Once our basic needs are taken care of, anything more, we need to consider how can we share that. Has God given this to me that I may share it? The other qualification is their need. Often, a needy person, when they ask for something, think they need the thing they're asking for and may need something that's a little different or maybe a lot different. And so their need should be taken into account. The Deuteronomy passage, you shall lend to him as much as he wants according to his need. You shall lend as much as he wants according as he is in need. And it's the righteous man, Psalm 112. He lends, but he directs his affairs with good judgment. There is some wisdom that needs to be exercised in evaluating what they're asking for, and is this going to meet their need? In our church, we have developed a policy for responding to requests for people that are asking for money. And we generally get a phone call about once a month asking for money. Almost always from someone who's never met anybody in our church. They're just calling through the phone book, hey, I need some money. We've had to develop some standards because usually in those cases, and as experience has proven, as I have actually investigated the needs of some of these people and tried to get to know them and get closer to them and understand, usually they're asking for something that's actually going to hurt them in the long run. They may be asking for money for a drug. They're not telling you that they needed to buy drugs, but that's what their felt need is want to get some more drugs. I've got to get the money somehow, and they're calling through the churches in the phone book. So we don't give money directly to people that ask. If they make it through the screening process, we'll try to find out, are you short on paying a utility bill? Can we pay the utility company directly? Are you short on paying rent? Can we pay your landlord directly? And that way we're not putting cash into the hands of someone who is tempted to spend it on something that they don't really need when they are in a financial crisis. Matthew Henry, he's had so many great quotes, and I want to pass them on. Look upon the request of the poor as giving you an opportunity for the duty of almsgiving. Look at it as an opportunity when someone asks you. You know God's called you to give to the poor, and so when someone asks, here's my opportunity. When a real object of charity presents itself, notice a real object, we should give at the first word. Yet the affairs of our charity must be guided with discretion, lest we give that to the idle and unworthy, which should be given to those who are necessitous and deserve wealth. Lending, he said, is sometimes a great piece of charity as giving, as great a piece of charity as giving, as it not only relieves the present exigency, but obliges the borrower to providence, industry, and honesty. Sometimes lending, instead of just giving a free handout, is a wise thing to do. Because, in his words, it can point that person towards God's providence, towards industry, having to work to get the money back, and honesty. A situation that we have applied that in our... In my experience has been the Tent Maker Project. This is one of the missions that our church supports as well. This organization takes money from American churches and gives that money to the poor people in Africa. So that's going to be full of problems, isn't it? Taking money from wealthy people in America, giving that money to poor people in Africa. There are all kinds of problems involved in there. And so we've had to create all kinds. I was involved in helping develop this mission a few years ago, and some of the things, we've had to create all kinds of wise safeguards to filter the movement of that money so that it is handled properly and it doesn't cause further problems in the lives of these poor people. And one of the ways we've decided to do that is through a loan system, so that we actually give money to their church and we train the church deacons how to coach other people in developing a Christian business. And so those deacons are the ones authorized to loan the money out, and it's supposed to be a loan, and then the poor person pays that money back to the church diaconal fund so that it's considered the Lord's money, and they have to pay it back. But they have the deacons of the church there to coach them and help them actually be successful. And then the money comes back and is available to help another poor person in the church so that it's not a continuous sinkhole of American funds, but they can begin to cycle it for themselves and help themselves. There's a great deal of wisdom that needs to be applied in wisely handling giving, and loaning could be is one tool that we have that God has given us in the toolbox for helping the poor. There's so much more that could be said, but I'm just going to leave it at that and move on to three objections. One of them might be, didn't God say that it was not good to be in debt? Doesn't God's word say, owe no one anything? So I shouldn't loan money to the poor because that will put them into debt, and that's not ideal for them. Adam Clark has a comment here. A loan is often more beneficial than an absolute gift, first because it flatters less the vanity of him who lends. Secondly, it spares more the shame of him who is in real want. And thirdly, it gives less encouragement to the idleness of him who may not be very honest. However, no advantage should be taken of the necessities of the borrower. It's not ideal to be in debt. But God's word is clear that the righteous man lends to the poor. And that means there is a biblical basis for lending in appropriate situations. We need to be willing. Another objection. There are over 1,200,000 charities in the United States alone. They're doing a good job I'll just give my money to them. I don't need to do this personally. My response to this, and I could spend a whole hour on this topic, one topic alone. My response to this is, I think that's part of the problem. Great Baptist Greek scholar from the previous century, A.T. Robertson, said, "In the organized charities of modern life, we're in danger of letting the milk of human kindness dry up." In the Christmas Carol, you know, Scrooge has donated to the poorhouse, but he's not willing to give any more because he feels like, well, I already gave to the poorhouse, the treadmill. Private giving has shriveled as personal relationships between the rich and the poor have become more and more distant. I believe this has given way to the situation we have in our culture today where, in the previous century, where almost all charity was done through these charities, organized institutions. And then in the next century, what happens? It's all being done by the government, right? Over half of the people in our country today are receiving benefits, checks from the government. That is what happens. And the government is... I'm going to try to stop here. My point is that personal relationships are key to accountability and training and wisdom. These things don't naturally happen in institutions. And so, no, I think it's part of the solution for us to get involved personally in helping the poor. It takes a huge amount of wisdom. The institutions have developed a lot of the policies and wisdom, and so it's going to be difficult to take that back on as private citizens, but we need to. Another response, I've already given. Somebody else comes and asks me, I've already given. I don't want to give anymore. In Luke 6, Jesus says, give to only a few of those who ask of you, right? No, he says, give to everyone who asks of you. My heart struggles with that one. To be honest, John Calvin's word there, Christ exhorts his disciples to be liberal and generous. And next, that the way of doing it is not to think that they've discharged their duty when they've aided a few persons, but to study to be kind to all and not to be weary of giving as long as they have the means. The bottom line is Jesus has given us a command and we're to obey that command. But our attitude is very important and how we obey that command. Our attitude teaches people what God is like. The way we give teaches people what God is like. They see what God is like in us. God invites us to be askers. He takes delight in being a giver to us. These verses showing up here on the screen have the same words for ask and give that are found in Matthew 5:42. There's Hannah saying, I prayed for this child, the Lord gave me, Samuel, gave me what I asked. God appears to Solomon, ask whatever you want and I will give it to you. That's God's attitude towards his people. Ask whatever you want. Psalm 2:8, Father says to the Son, ask of me and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. Ask. Come on, ask. Zechariah 10, ask the Lord for rain. It's the Lord who makes the storms. He gives showers of rain to men and the plants of the field to everyone. Just ask for it. Luke 11, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you'll find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. And Matthew 7 continues, for everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds, and to him who knocks the door will be opened. The woman at the well, Jesus said, if you only knew who it was that is asking water from you, you would ask from him and he would give you living water. John 15:16, you didn't choose me, I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit. Fruit will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. That's God's attitude towards his people. He wants to give us what we ask for. James 1, if any of you lack wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. 1 John 5:8, if anyone sees his brother committing a sin not leading to death, he should pray, or ask, literally, and God will give him life. Ask God for these things. Forgiveness of sins, wisdom, provision. Ask. God says, ask. This is the way he relates to us. And this is the way that we can position ourselves with other people. We can take the attitude that God does of saying, just act. And we demonstrate what God is like to the people around us. What are we teaching other people about God? Matthew Henry says, what God says to us, we should be ready to say to our poor brother, and ask him, it'll be given to you. Jesus says, from him that would borrow of you, turn not away. So be easy of access to him that would borrow, though he be bashful, and not have confidence to make known his case and beg the favor. Yet you know both his need and his desire, therefore offer him kindness. It becomes us to be thus forward, to take initiative rather than even waiting for them to ask for kindness. Because before we call, God hears us and presents us, which in the old days meant goes in front of us, with the blessings of his goodness. Adam Clark, God who makes use of the beggar's hand to ask our charity is the same from whom we ourselves beg our daily bread. And dare we refuse him? Let us show at least mildness and compassion. And when we can do no more, and if we cannot or will not relieve a poor man, let us never give him an ill word or an ill look. If we don't relieve him, we have no right to insult him. John Gill wrote, turn not away from him with a frown or without speaking to him or with a denial. Look on him with a pleasant countenance and cheerfully lend him what he wants. This attitude with which we respond to requests teaches other people what our God is like. Teachers, parents, husbands, wives, everybody, take heed. The way you respond to requests is teaching your spouse, your children, your students, your roommates what God is like. What are you teaching them about God? Let it show in the way you talk to them. Well, this has taken me longer than I expected to get through. Some Bible illustrations. Abraham, remember, Lot took advantage, took the good land, gave Abraham the bad land, and then Lot got into trouble. And what did Abraham do? Served him right? No. Took 500 soldiers and took off against an army of five nations that had banded together. And he got his nephew back. He went the extra mile to show kindness to his bratty nephew. Joseph, his brother, sell him into slavery, trick his father into thinking he'd been killed so his father didn't even look for him anymore. And then what's he do? When his brothers come in begging for grain, Joseph gives them grain and gives them their money back too. He's generous. And eventually says, why don't you just come live here? I'll take care of you. Elisha, funny, hilarious story, really, that's not very often told in among children's Bible stories, where the Syrians come and are trying to conquer Israel, and they're trying to find the king and engage in battle. And they end up at the prophet Elisha's house. And Elisha says, okay, this will be fun. God, strike them all with blindness. And so, you know, this entire army is blind. And he says, okay, boys, come follow me. I'll take you. I'll take you to the person you're looking for. Brings them right into the middle of the capital city. Says, king, make a big banquet hall. Big banquet. Lots of tables and chairs. We're going to feed the whole Syrian army. And the king's going, no way. said, just do it, just do it, Elisha says. So they feed all these blind soldiers, and then Elisha says, okay, open their eyes, God. And then the soldiers realize they've just been entertained and given a free meal by the people they're trying to kill, and so they all walk back home and don't give Israel any more trouble for a while. Showing graciousness to your enemies. And of course, the ultimate example, God gave His own Son so that we who deserve to perish could have eternal life as we believe in Him. I'm going to quit right there. I had a couple more cross-references, but I'm going to stop for the sake of time. Just, if you want to look at them on your own, 2 Corinthians 9 and Luke 6, I think, are good parallel passages that talk about our attitude towards helping the poor.